Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Desperate House Witches. My name is Raina Starr. Dorian Wallace has the night off. If you are new to Desperate House Witches, welcome. You have landed on a very auspicious evening. First Fridays of the month are with the Pagan Pundit. I'll bring him on in a minute. But first, a little bit of business. Desperate House Witches is brought to you by the Wicked One herself, incredible Dorothy Morrison, and Wicked Witch Studios. The new line of home blessing ornaments for 2019 are out. Go get them while they're still available, because I understand they're in limited supply. And Dorothy Morrison's amazing Wicked Witch Studio products can also be purchased through The Angry Cauldron at theangrycauldron.com, and they do international shipping. Also, if you're looking for Mercury retrograde, any kind of retrograde protection bracelets, my line is available through Asheville, Raven, and Crone in beautiful Asheville, North Carolina. So as I was saying, if you're new to Desperate House Witches, welcome. I do have to warn you, this is not a G, PG, or even an R-rated show. So if bad language, bodily functions, or any other type of offensive material is upsetting to you, you may want to leave now. But if you are in for the politics, baby, tonight is your night. Taliesin Govanen, lay it on me, baby. What's going on?
Hey, hey, hey. How's it going out there in internet land? This is your pagan pundit, Taliesin Govanen. Still basking in the wonderful afterglow of that incredible blue wave we saw in November.
Yeah. Yes, we sure did.
That was a, you know, don't let the fucking talking heads change your minds. That was a big-ass fucking blue wave. That was a bigger wave than the wave that swept in Newt Gingrich and all his cronies who had their contract on America in the 90s. It was a bigger wave than the Tea Party wave in 2010. It was a major fucking wave. And the fact of the matter is that that's really the best electoral map that Republicans are going to have for the next two election cycles. 2020 and 2022 are both looking like far, far more challenging election cycles for the Republicans, especially because of the Senate. The fact that they still control the Senate is a fluke of what seats were up this year. And they know that after 2020 that there's no way the Republicans are going to control any houses of Congress. So, you know, the blue wave, but, you know, it's the beginning. I mean, this was a big-ass blue wave, but it's just the beginning because the real tidal wave is coming. So, yeah. And, you know, shit like we've had today with the Michael Cohen sentencing documents and the shit we're hearing coming out of the Mueller investigation, the insanely juicy shit that's coming out of the Mueller investigation. I mean, you know, the hell of it is, see, there was, I always knew that there was going to be this point where we started getting really, really juicy shit coming out. I knew that this was going to happen, but I knew it was going to take time. But, you know, and so this isn't even, it's not even in full swing yet. This is like just barely the little burping beginnings. This is a huge, expansive investigation. What actually started, we now know, before Bob Mueller was even appointed, because we knew about the FBI counterintelligence investigation that was going on against Trump. But now we found out that Andy McCabe had an obstruction of justice inquiry open at the Justice Department. And so, I mean, it's like, you know, so that shit started before Mueller, and that just, you know, that just cements it in farther, because you have, you know, you know, it's like you have an incredible groundwork laid down and then all this stuff just laid on top of it. So, I mean, Cohen is, Cohen's going down for state charges, and that's the hell of it, too, is that these state charges, that's the thing to watch, is the kind of sentences people get from state charges, because Cohen's big mistake is that he resisted in cooperating as much as the Southern District of New York wanted him to cooperate. They wanted him to cooperate even more, and he tried to pick and choose because he was being so cooperative with Mueller. He was hoping that that would buy him goodwill, but see, that's the thing. Fucking federal and state courts are separate. Making one happy with you isn't going to help you with the other. And that's what he's going to learn. I think the next people that start singing to the Southern District are going to be singing a lot more and a lot more comprehensively, because they're going to see that, you know, no matter how well they play nice with Mueller, they also have to play nice with the Southern District if they want to have any prayer of getting a sentence that's not going to leave them, you know, old and gray by the time they see the sun again, you know?
Exactly. And the fact that individual one that we all now know, of course, is Trump. This is really, I mean, thank you, Bob Mueller, for taking the time and doing it right and making sure your ducks were in a row in spite of everything that went on with Jeff Sessions no longer being the AG and this guy, Whitaker, who I had never even heard of, to be honest with you, before this all came about. And
most people hadn't.
Well, you know, and a lot of people freaked out when Trump installed him illegally, just FYI, that he was going to try to interrupt the inquiry and put an end to the investigation. And this guy's basically been not seen or heard from since that point. So obviously, the powers that we thought he had, he does not have, and our fears about that are, you know, in my opinion, now put to rest, unless you're going to tell me something I don't know, which is always possible and always likely. But the fact
of
the matter
is they're not pushing Whitaker because there's a strong question of the legitimacy of his appointment. And the fact of the matter is that if you start, the thing that they don't want is they don't want to start the institutions having organized resistance to their administration. And so they don't want to put justice into a situation where you're going to have people at some point in the hierarchy saying, I'm not going to answer to this guy because I'm not convinced that he's going to wind up staying in his job because there's a real question as to his legitimacy. I think what's going to happen, Trump has never notified the correct federal agencies to A, fire Sessions, and B, appoint Whitaker as the interim. They haven't officially notified the correct agencies. What I'll bet Trump is going to do is he's going to just try to leapfrog it, appointment, see if he can get the Senate to speed it through, and just leave the whole question of Whitaker sitting, you know, off to the side, kind of like, okay, he tried to do something with putting Whitaker in there. He got too much pushback, so he's just kind of like going to let this guy hang fire until he can get his official appointee in. And he's going really, really establishment for his official appointee.
Yeah.
The guy who he's picked to be the replacement AG is not somebody who's going to circumvent established Justice Department protocols to please Donald Trump's whims. But, you know, it's kind of like he has to do this because he can't afford a protracted nominating fight with a Senate majority that is, you know, of Republicans that's this demonstrably weakened and demoralized. And, you know, so it's just the whole situation's deliciously chaotic. I'm just sitting back munching the popcorn, saying, "Hey, I'll just be like, I'll just sit back. You guys keep going. This is fun." Yeah.
Yeah. Remember how I was avoiding the news because it was just such a roller coaster? This is now kind of roller coaster. Now I'm enjoying it. I relish it. I love it. I'm so grateful for the early Yule gift from Bob Mueller.
You know,
I'm still curious about Roger Stone and what's going to happen to his happy ass, along with some other fine points that I'm sure we're going to cover. This is just mind-boggling. I'm so, you know, one of the things, but I did want to say, one of the things that has really pissed me off with the Republicans, and I will also admit, over this last couple of years, there have been some Republicans that I have really learned to appreciate because they did not just jump on the Trump wagon, as it were. And those
right.
people who actually are old school conservatives, believing in conserving the planet and the water and all those good things, I may not agree on a lot of their policies, but I find them a lot less disagreeable because we both seem to have an understanding of what's fucking crazy and what's
right.
acceptable disagreement, you know, normal parameters. But what I was going to say was I'm still concerned about this whole Mitch McConnell refusing to even let it happen to vote on a bill to protect Mueller. Is that now null and void with today's announcements? Does it need to be installed anyway? Do you think that this is this the big deal that we've been waiting for, or do you think Mueller has even more?
Oh, no. We have not seen the full fruits of the Mueller investigation. There are still – I mean, don't forget, they – got in 24 cases of blank subpoenas just a few months ago. These are not indicting documents. These are subpoenas. These are, yes, we're still bringing people before the grand jury. Yes, we're still questioning people. They, you know, at this point in an investigation like this, they're going to have an idea of where they're going and where they're connecting the dots. And now the question, now they just got to get this information in front of a grand jury and get the indictments handed down. But it looks like it's going to be very broad. It's going to be very, very expansive. And there are some people who you just don't know. You just, you know, there are people who look like they're willing to go to jail for Donald Trump, like Roger Stone. But then again, you never know. Roger Stone's very, very unstable and very unpredictable, and you have no idea what he's going to do. I mean, during the Watergate scandal, the original Watergate burglars all pled guilty so that there wouldn't be a trial. And on the day that they were sentenced, very, very harshly. We're talking very, very hard, long prison sentences. And the one guy who was involved, James McCord, handed a letter to the judge that day, which basically blew the lid off the Watergate cover-up because he talked about how they were bribed into and pressured into staying silent and that perjury was encouraged and that sort of thing. I wouldn't, you know, that's that McCord moment, you know, that handing of the letter that just completely changes the ball game. At any point, you've got multiple people who could have their own McCord moment. You could have Roger Stone. You could have fucking Don Jr. Don't forget, Don Jr. is probably going to get indicted, and he's probably going to get indicted on state charges that are going to be very, very harsh, and state charges that his dad can't protect him from with a presidential pardon. So you never know. He could be, you know, there's going to be somebody at some point who's going to say, hey, guess what? That one piece of information you've been looking for, I got it. Now, if we could arrange for me to be able to, like, get out of jail before my kids graduate, I'll give it to you. That kind of thing. Again, that McCord, I'm waiting for it. I mean, there have already been, I mean, there are several Watergate moments that have happened and you're just waiting for other ones, to, you know, the equivalent to happen. So it's all, but again, with having one of the houses of Congress, though, having the House of Representatives under Democratic control with Speaker Pelosi and stuff that in your fucking pipe and smoke it, all you misogynist motherfuckers on the right, Speaker Pelosi, wah, 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 you know, red alert, that again, the really stupid shit that they were gearing up for if they managed to hold on. They had a whole raft of shit that they wanted to try to push through if they held on to the House. They wanted to try to push through a complete abolition of Social Security as we know it, to basically get rid of Medicare, Medicaid, to completely annihilate as much of the social safety net as they could, because they knew that in 2020 they were going to lose the entire House of Cards, both houses of Congress, the presidency. You know, this is really their last hurrah, and now they can't do anything because Nancy Pelosi knows how to keep her caucus together. You're not going to see Democrats defecting over to the Republicans for any of their half-assed schemes, okay? I mean, she will put together, a coalition to put – to pass things like, you know, making sure that the government stays open and that kind of thing. But the stupid shit, that's all been written off. And I predict that over the next year, you're going to see a bunch of the most hardcore right-wing Republicans walk away from the House of Representatives because they're not really going to get to do a whole lot. And because on one hand, the crazy caucus is emboldened because a lot of moderates wound up losing their seats in the last election. But the thing is that there's still enough establishment Republicans that are looking at 2020. They're looking at the fact that there's a bunch of them that are hoping that Donald Trump is going to decide to not run for reelection, just to declare victory and walk away. Especially since, and there's all kinds of weird fucking shit that could happen with their, oh my God, the possibilities in the next Republican presidential race. If you thought the last race was chaotic and weird and you can't believe what you're fucking seeing, the next one on the Republican side could be even more bizarre. So, you know, but the thing is that most of the stuff they want to do to try to fuck over common Americans, they just aren't going to get to do it. And they can get up and make speeches, but they, you know, I don't think a lot of these guys, and when you think about it, the House of Representatives has been in Republican hands for the last 8 years. There's a bunch of people there who are not very good at being in the minority because they've never had to do it. And so I really think that you're going to see more Republicans walking away, especially if you start – I mean, just about every contested election, with the exception of Florida, because Florida is fucking insane. But a lot of these contested elections have all been swinging the Democrats' way. And as more and more, like, special elections happen over the next couple of years and more, you know, as things pop up and more seats swing away from the Republicans and a bigger swing in the general populace happens away from Republicans, you're going to see the establishment wing really try to clamp down on the crazy wing. Because they're going to try – the establishment wing is going to try to put forward one of their guys for 2020 and – you know, it's going to be a big showdown. So I don't think that the Republicans, even in the crazy caucus in the House, are going to have a whole lot of fun because they're going to have the establishment guys saying, hey, would you mind not fucking all of us over, guys? But, literally think about this. Think about how crazy this could get, because Mike Pence is doing all of the party building, reaching out, glad-handing that Donald Trump refuses to do. Donald Trump thinks he's too good to do. Donald Trump thinks the Republican Party should come and kiss his fucking ring. Mike Pence is going out there. He's doing fundraising events for people. He's campaigning for people. He's opening doors for people into, you know, conservative fundraising events. He's really building up a lot of favors. And Trump is starting to eye Pence. He's starting to kind of not trust him a whole lot. He's starting to get worried.
I heard that.
That Pence is out to stab him in the back. So the thing is, you could see a move by Donald Trump. There's word that Donald Trump is going to try to dump Mike Pence and run with somebody else for re-election as vice president.
Really?
Somebody who he views as more loyal to him. Because Mike Pence was kind of pushed on him by Paul Manafort. Trump never wanted Mike Pence.
Right.
Trump wanted somebody like Chris Christie or Rudy Giuliani. You know, he wanted somebody big and bombastic like him. And he never liked Mike Pence. He doesn't like Mike Pence's piety. He doesn't like his religiosity. Pence thinks that Trump is a horrible sinner, and Trump thinks that Pence is a horrendous prude. They really just do not mix. And the thing is, though, is that then there's a question, that if Trump does this clumsily, and he probably will, Trump will probably let something leak. He'll probably float a trial balloon about replacing Mike Pence as vice president in 2020, which could then get Mike Pence deciding to try to see if he can get enough people to pull the trigger on the 25th Amendment. Because if he can remove Trump from power and become acting president, then he could run for a full term as president in 2020 as an incumbent. So you could literally see an incident where Trump lets out a trial balloon about replacing Mike Pence, and then all of a sudden we're in the midst of a constitutional crisis. So take a look and watch and see, you know, anybody in the D.C. area, any of you people out there, if anybody could float me a line and let me know if they see any of Mike Pence's aides and any of Nancy Pelosi's aides doing lunch. If you could let me know if you see anybody doing that, that would be great, because if those two camps start talking, then we know that we're probably going to be in for a really, really a shitstorm of ridiculous proportions when it comes to news drama. I mean, I think it would be fucking hilarious, because seeing Trump versus Pence would be, oh my God, that would just be fun to sit back and watch that. That's even better than Godzilla versus Megalon. So.
Yeah, but would Pence even have a chance? I mean, anytime you think of Pence now, you have to think of Trump. Doesn't that already taint him?
Oh, it completely taints him. But that's the thing is that, okay. Tell everybody have fun. My wife and kids are going swimming at the Y. Yay. But that's the thing is that Mike Pence wants to be president. Mike Pence thinks he's ordained by God to be president. And he just thinks that if he can get in there that, you know, as an incumbent, that he could get the party behind him and he can eke out a victory. He's completely wrong. But, I mean, you just don't know. Pence is the wild card, because again, Pence is building up an infrastructure within the party. I mean, a lot of people are thinking that Pence is going to try to overthrow. He's going to try to run against Trump in the 2020 primary. I don't think he would do that. I don't think he'd do that, because it's a very, very hard thing to do. But I think Pence wouldn't be beyond. If he thinks that Trump could actually win re-election and Trump doesn't try to dump him from the ticket, I could see him staying on board until after, if they were to win, which they wouldn't, but his plan would be to stay on board until after the second inauguration and then invoke 25th Amendment. Because let's face it, Trump gives you a reason to invoke 25th Amendment weekly. It doesn't take long for Trump to give you another reason to declare him mentally incompetent. You never, you know, there's always going to be plenty of material if you want to rule Trump mentally incompetent. But, you know, so there's all kinds of Machiavellian shit floating around. That's just – and the thing is that if Trump – and a Trump-Pence feud, that is exactly what would – that could be the fissure that would just completely fracture the Republican Party, because – you're talking two of the most major demographic groups for Republicans are racists and right-wing religious nut jobs. And Trump has the racists, and Pence has the right-wing religious nut jobs. And if Trump and Pence start feuding and Pence challenges Trump for the nomination, or Trump tries to dump Pence from the ticket, you're going to see those two camps are going to go to war against each other. Because the racists are going to back Trump and the right-wing religious nut jobs are going to back Pence. And then you're going to see that entire party just come apart at the seams. It doesn't take impeachment to make them fracture. Trust me. Regular electoral politics could just completely annihilate them. And then, you know,
I don't think anybody's going to let Trump dump Pence. I really don't see that happening, because given what's going on right now, there's already enough fracturing that I think they can't, they're barely holding together, and they're being crushed by the weight of their own stupidity. I'm sorry. There's no other way for me to see this. So to add a feud with Pence on top of an already fracturing party, would just devastate the party, and I don't think they're going to let Trump even try to get away with it. I know he is uncontrollable in a lot of respects.
Yeah.
I understand all of that. But by the same token, when they go to him and say, you will be removed, because I would almost think that somebody in the Republican Party is going to start telling him, look, if you make this move, we will abandon you and we will put up the 25th Amendment and get you removed. I think if they threaten him enough, he will have to relent. Otherwise, he will be removed, because he is crushing, just the weight of his stupidity is crushing the party. That's what I think.
But the thing is, the problem is, and this is one of the institutional problems in the Republican Party, is they stitch together a coalition that could bring them victories at times, but it's such a haphazard and fragile coalition that is so dependent on incredibly unstable, incredibly almost sociopathic political ideals. I mean, when you literally have
Taliesin. We seem to have lost Taliesin for the moment. Hopefully he will call back in momentarily. But
is
I understand what you... Oh, there you are. You went away for a minute. You're back now. There you are.
Okay.
We could not hear you for a minute.
Oh, wow. That's weird. But no, these guys, the people of the Republican Party, the major factions that are still there, they're not a basket of deplorables. They're a bundle of nut jobs. And the thing is that Trump has already been shown himself to be impetuous, and he gets a bug up his bonnet. He gets this idea in his head, and he's not going to get thrown from it. I mean, think about this. The dumbest thing, I mean, the best attorney general for Trump's outlook on immigration and law enforcement and race relations, he couldn't have hoped for a better person than Jeff Sessions. As far as somebody who's going to push Trump's anti-immigrant agenda and, you know, basically no lives but white lives matter type of approach to law enforcement. And like all of the Trump's match in heaven was Jeff Sessions. But Trump expected Jeff Sessions to protect his ass. And when Sessions recused himself, which he kind of had to do, but when he recused himself and Trump felt betrayed, that's it. At that point, Sessions was not going to finish out the first term with Trump. It was just a question of when this was going to happen. And the people in the party worked it. They threatened him. They came out and said, we are not going to approve another attorney general, you know, in the next 6 months or whatever. So basically, if you fire Jeff Sessions, you're not going to have anybody in there, that kind of thing. And they worked it and they threatened him, and he still eventually got his way. So the biggest thing for Donald Trump is loyalty. He feels that people should be personally loyal to him. And he feels that everybody in the Republican Party should be personally loyal to him, not to the country, not to the party, but to him as the head of that party. And if he thinks that Mike Pence is working behind the scenes to fuck him, to stab him in the back, he's going to try to dump him. He will get that beat up his bonnet, and he will work like hell. And again, he will tear that party apart trying to get it done. But he will, if he decides that, you know, there's a lot of things that Mike Pence could do. Mike Pence could fuck Ivanka and Donald Trump and be like, hey, good. I've always, you know, what's she like? I've always wondered. But, you know, personal disloyalty, that is the one thing that Donald Trump will not forgive. And you saw that with Jeff Sessions. So now that Trump doesn't have a unified Republican wall in Congress shielding his ass, it's going to get it's going to get like Greek theater in Washington. It's going to be in ways that I think that we're going to really enjoy. I think we're going to be able to enjoy the Greek theater over this next 6 month period. I really do.
Wow. So let me ask again, because I think I lost the thread on this one. Do you think that they still need to put up a bill that protects Mueller?
I think it would be a good idea to put up a bill to protect Mueller because of the fact that, again, this is something where they will be issuing indictments for the next 12 months. Okay, they're going to be trying these cases for years. And, you know, the big landmark boom indictments haven't happened yet. I mean, Don Jr.
Right.
still is free. And there's a lot of people, there's a lot of Republicans who are saying, yeah, he's going the fuck down. You know, he's going down, you know, it's like he's going down like Ivanka and her friends at a Wellesley party. But, oh, my gosh.
That's funny. So do you think Jared and Ivanka are also going to be, you know, wind up with indictments as well?
See, that's the thing, too, is that I'm still thinking that, see, Donald Trump is going to tread very lightly around Jared because I don't think Jared would hesitate for a minute to fuck over the old man to try to save his own ass. I think that, you know, in basically, I think Jared, you know, his number one is himself. His number two is his everyone else. I think that I think he would walk into Bob Mueller's office and offer to give him everything if he thought that's what it took to cover his ass and to keep him and his wife out of jail. Because, I mean, the Kushners are fucking ruthless. These are cutthroat business people. They don't fuck around. So I don't think Jared Kushner is not the person who's going to spend 30 years in a federal penitentiary for Donald Trump. He's just not going to do it. So
right.
I think that that's another thing that can get very, very interesting. I mean, if you start seeing, and the thing is that Ivanka will stay loyal to her dad. She'll absolutely
right.
stay loyal to her father. So if you start seeing stories, rumors drifting around about Jared and Ivanka not living together, then you'll know that Jared is talking to Mueller.
Wow. And I can so see that happening. This is
oh, yeah.
completely going to fracture the whole thing for them. This
I mean,
is,
Don
this
Jr. is already getting
really
divorced.
Bad.
Don Jr. is already getting divorced.
Yeah, but that was for other reasons, wasn't it?
Yeah,
wasn't
no,
it, wasn't
but also.
Wasn't he the one having an affair?
No, that's the thing, though, is that Don Jr. is getting divorced mainly because, you know, the women who, the society women who marry Trump boys, they're looking for somebody who's going to have enough stable family money to take care of them for the rest of their life. If, you know,
yeah.
I'm thinking that Don Jr.'s wife looked at what kind of trouble he's in. She's going to know more than a lot of people what kind of trouble he's in. And just like, you know what? No, I am not going to sit while your ass roasts in jail. And I think she's dumping him because she's convinced that he's going to go to jail.
Wow. You don't think any of the wives are going to turn state's evidence, do you?
I really don't think. I don't think that Don or Eric's wives, I don't think they were really involved. The people who are really involved in the business are Trump's own children along with Jared. The only one of the in-laws between, you know, his son-in-law, daughter-in-laws, who really got involved in the family business is Jared. The women,
right.
Don and Eric's wives, were not expected to, and they just didn't. I don't think that they're going to wind up having a whole lot of info. Although, again, you know, Don Jr.'s wife already sent up her signal of how she thinks this is going to go by divorcing his ass. So.
Right, right. Well, I thought she was divorcing him because he had an affair, but, you know, pile on whatever. You know, it makes sense. But
oh, yeah.
do you still think that Trump is going to try to have Mueller fired? Do you think that's like the next thing he's going to try to do?
The thing is that he's wanted to do it. He said he's going to do it. He's tried to do it. He's had people thwart him. I really think that there is somebody who is I don't know. I don't know if it's happened yet, but if it hasn't happened yet, it's got to happen soon, where somebody comes into Trump and says, listen, let me explain to you what, you know, what reciprocal avenues of information means. Because Mueller has had this deal with the New York State Attorney General's office since like 3 months after Mueller started his investigation, where basically anything that covers any law that was broken within the borders of the state of New York, which is about 70% of what Mueller's looking into, happened in New York, including a lot of stuff with the Russians, all that stuff gets fed directly to the Attorney General of the state of New York so that he can pursue state-level charges. So in other words, you can get rid for one thing, there are already some indictments that are sealed. Those indictments are locked in. If you fire Mueller, those indictments don't go away. And one of the rumors is that a couple of them have Donald Trump's name on them to be unsealed the moment he's out of office. So that could already be the case. But also, you shut down that federal investigation, and all that information that Mueller has already gotten has already been shared with the state of New York's attorney general. And the person they got put in there after the last guy had his scandal, this woman, she's no bullshit, no nonsense, and is still pursuing these things against the Trump company and Trump organization. So, it's the kind of thing that would destroy Trump's support on Capitol Hill. Because a lot of these Republican senators, when it comes to people at home, the Republicans at home that are like, you know, saying, hey, what about all this illegal shit that's going on? Are you going to talk to us about this? Mueller's been their shield. They've been able to say, well, Bob Mueller's a good guy, and he's investigating this, so I'm not going to comment because I'm going to let this investigation, you know, shake itself out, and I'm confident that, you know, everybody will be exonerated and the yada, 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 bullshit, 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 platitudes, platitudes, right. Platitudes. But he's been their shield. And I think if Trump tried to fire Mueller, especially with these indictments that are now starting to come down, I think that would force a showdown on Capitol Hill. I think that would force McConnell to put that kind of a bill up. And that in that kind of a situation, I think it would pass with a veto-proof majority. Just because there's just way too many guys who are going to have a really, 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 really tough reelection campaign in 2 years. They're all going to have Mitch McConnell on speed dial. And they're all going to be saying, please don't do anything that's going to fuck me over. And, you know, letting Bob Mueller get torpedoed and not lifting a finger to do anything, I don't think that they could let that – I don't think that they could withstand that. I think they would – lean on Mitch McConnell to allow the vote to go through, or what they would do is they would get him to agree to not block another bill and attach the Mueller bill as a writer onto that bill. So that's another thing they could do. But I really think that this blue wave. I mean, you know, let's face it. Remember, the Republicans were supposed to have the House of Representatives until 2022. That was the original plan, because they had basically gerrymandered the fuck out of things so incredibly hardcore that basically they were saying that there's no way Democrats are ever going to get the House back until after the 2020 census and after redistricting, if they can, you know, control some more state legislatures, which they're going to do now, by the way, because of this great fucking blue wave that happened, controlling more state legislatures during redistricting. Fuck yeah. But it wasn't supposed to be. They weren't supposed to have a chance to undo the gerrymandering that was supposed to lock in a Republican majority until 2022, until after the 2020 census. And now the House of Representatives is in Democratic hands. And the Senate is going to be a very, very tough thing for the Republicans to hold in 2020. They're going to be in full-on batshit panic mode. And the thing is, when senators are in batshit panic mode, the first thing that happens is their spine turns to gelatin. And the first thing they – and the hilarious thing, I mean, this happens to Democrats too. Don't fool yourself. Democrats, you know, the amazing jello spine of a Democrat who's in panic mode, worried about reelection. Republicans can be just as bad, especially the mainstream guys I mean, let's face it, in the Republican Senate caucus, the crazy caucus is very limited. I mean, it's people like fucking Ted Cruz and Joni Ernst, and, you know, it's a very small handful of people. You know, you don't have the sheer numbers of lunatics that you do in the House on the Senate side.
Right.
And so you've got so many milquetoast senators from so many states that are only marginally red. And these people, they're just going to be shitting turnips for the next 2 years because, again, they're going to face a much worse map in 2 years. So they're going to be they're going to make Mitch McConnell want to quit his job, I swear. I wouldn't be surprised if Mitch McConnell quits before 2020 happens. I really wouldn't be surprised.
Well, I would be surprised. He seems like no matter what the storm is, he manages to come out of it. It's been an amazing career, you know. I mean, he just I don't know what magic this man has, but wow. When I thought he was going to lose it before, he didn't. So he's got an iron will for sure.
Now, I think Mitch McConnell is going to do, though, because of the way that his state is trending and because of the demographic shifts that are happening, especially after this last election, I think that Mitch McConnell is probably going to pull Paul Ryan. I think at some point in 2019 – because I think he's up for re-election in 2020, if I'm not mistaken. But I think he's going to announce that this is going to be his last term, basically. I don't think that he's going to seek re-election. I think he's just going to try to ride it out. You know, I think that if it looks like the Republicans are going to have their asses handed to them in the 2020 elections, I think he'll bow out. I think he'll let some other Republican deal with a post-2020 where the Democrats are controlling everything in Washington, and it's a completely different world than McConnell has known. And with a party that's probably at that point going to be fractured and destroyed, I wouldn't be surprised if he decided to just, you know, kind of ride off into the sunset, make this his last term.
Wow.
Not necessarily walk away early, but just be like, you know what, guys? It's like, if he's going to lose being majority leader anyway, fuck it. Just let's go out and go fishing with James Baker, you know?
Wow, that's pretty startling. You know,
I wouldn't be surprised.
It amazes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead. You first.
Well, it's just that he's hit the pinnacle. He is majority leader. This is the pinnacle of his career. Mitch McConnell's smart enough to know that he's never going to be president. He's never going to be vice president. He's not the kind of guy who's going to get picked to be Secretary of State. So being Senate majority leader, that's it. That's the pinnacle of his career. And I really think that if he gets to the point where he's going to have to be Senate Minority Leader, I think he's just going to walk away, you know, go out on top. So that's my prediction.
That's fascinating. So I also wanted to talk to you a little bit about this whole Mark Harris thing that's going on here in North Carolina. You know, after years of hearing the Republicans whine about, you know, voter ID laws and, you know, oh, people who shouldn't be voting are voting, we come to find out that they are basically stealing elections by having people go around and collect absentee ballots and doing we don't know what with them. That is still not decided, and it has been told that he will not be seated because of the fact that this needs to get straightened out. And they are talking about the 9th District here having another election. And I was wondering if you had heard about that and what your thoughts were on that.
Well, I mean, it's another pattern that we saw that it was just so bald-faced this time. Republicans, in order to win, they have to cheat. That's all there is to it. They don't have the confidence in being able to predict, you know, and being able to win over the populace. So they've got to cheat. South Carolina came out and admitted in court documents that they trimmed back Sunday, early voting on Sundays, because that's when most black people did early voting and most black people are Democrats. And that was a reason given to justify why they were trimming back early voting on Sundays. I mean, it's just gotten to the point where it's just gotten so obvious and so desperate. And the thing that happens, though, with that is that that is just continuously galvanizing the left. It's continuously galvanizing people to get involved. It's continuously galvanizing people to, I mean, you know, just don't be surprised if you see official Democratic Party people with official, like, you know, fucking IDs going around educating people on voting stuff and doing that kind of stuff next time. Because that's another thing that's going on, too. You know, people are not giving enough credit to the people leading the Democratic National Committee, the DNC. I mean, we've got Keith Ellison in there, and we've got, Jesus Christ, my brain just farted.
Tom Perez,
yes. We got Perez and Ellison, Keith Ellison in there. And these guys are doing great things. I mean, they are putting money where money needs to go. They're getting IDs for Latino people in Texas that match up with the voter ID laws. They're getting IDs for Native Americans in the North and South Dakota that will satisfy those voter ID laws to make sure they get to vote. They're picking the right battles. They're putting their money in the right places to highlight the places where the Republicans are trying to outright cheat and steal elections. And it's drawing a lot of attention to it. And again, the methodology is just so bold-faced. It is just so obvious that, you know, again, those mushy middle people, those people in the Republican Party who aren't the hardcore partisans, but the people who are just kind of Republican for whatever fucking reason, usually a reason that's been out of date for a decade. But still, these are the people that, again, are going to see this stuff and go, no, we can't do this. And again, a lot of the mushy middle in the Republican Party, it's in that upper middle class demographic where they get most of their fundraising from. I mean, in the Republican Party, they have their rich donor class, and they still hold a lot of fucking power. But really, their next biggest donor class after the rich guys is that upper middle class, those college-educated Republicans, those people who are earning, like, in the low six figures, people who would tell you they don't feel rich, but for those of us who don't have anything approaching six figures, it's like, yeah, it looks pretty wealthy to me. But these are the people
right.
who really are most of your small dollar donations for the Republican Party. And really, elections are being fought on small dollar donations now. I mean, the era when you could go out and pick up all your multi-million dollar bundle checks to fund your campaign, that's over. You need fast money. You need small money donors that can give over and over again who haven't hit their limit yet. Who can give you that money, that fast flood of money when you need it at the last minute to do that last minute thing. And for the Republican Party, that's these people, these college educated Republicans that really don't like the methodology that's being used to try to win some of these elections for Republicans. And if their small money donors start abandoning them, then they're going to be even more screwed. I mean, their last election cycle was one of the worst for fundraising. The fundraising really dried up because it was fucking hopeless. There was no way they were going to keep the house, and nobody wanted to throw bad money after that. Well, 2020 is looking even more brutal. And so, again, Mitch McConnell's got to think, you know, Donald Trump could very well be gone after 2020, but if Mitch McConnell wants to try to hold a majority, he's going to have guys that are still there that he's got to think about. And if Trump tries to do something again, we come back to this. If Trump tries to do something, McConnell doesn't want him to do it, he might have to actually take a stand against Trump in order to try to preserve his own caucus.
Interesting. Oh, before I forget.
Yes.
So I keep hearing about this power grab going on in, was it Michigan? The Michigan
Wisconsin.
House?
Wisconsin.
Thank you.
They're both both Republican legislatures, since they're basically being replaced by Democrats. They're trying to change the laws to make sure that the incoming Democratic legislatures can't do as much. They can't undo certain laws. They're trying to make it, trying to, like, change their ability to undo the things that the Republicans are doing at the last minute before they get turfed out by losing, like the losing losers that they are. So, like any fucking loser that's ever existed in history, they're going to go out and do a typical loser's move of trying to change the rules so that their shit can't be undone. But the Democrats are pretty they're pretty confident that they're going to be able to put together the legal bills to be able to say, fuck you and the horse you rode in on. I'm sorry, I didn't realize that was you, Ann Coulter. But anyway.
Wow. So because of my understanding is in at least one location, this got passed.
Right. But again, there's the question, there's going to be legal challenges. It's like, is it possible in these states under their constitutions for the legislature to vote itself power away that it can't vote itself to get back? I mean, again, it's a real question. I think you're going to be looking at a protracted legal battle, which, again, the Republican Party is going to have to pay for, because you know that these incoming Democratic legislatures are not going to allocate money to pay for a legal defense of laws that they consider to be unconstitutional according to their state constitution. So, you know, the Republicans are going to have to pay for these legal things, and Republicans can't afford to throw money away. So It's like, does this shit get defended? How far does it get pushed? There's a lot of open questions. And I mean, the days of being able to have nice sewn up pat, yeah, this is what's going to happen because these are the, that we're not in that land right now. We're not living in that land right now. Now it's a lot of, ooh, that's interesting. We're going to have to wait to see how that goes. But it's going to, it's going to, you know, I really think it's going to be a big major mistake because it's going to be a drain on the Republican Party coffers to try to pursue this legislation. Because in a few of these states, the new attorney general is also a Democrat, so they are definitely not going to want to spend money to defend something that they consider to be unconstitutional. So it'll be up to the Republican Party to spend the money, and let's see if they actually feel like spending it. So if they cave on this, if they just abandon it to the courts and don't challenge the first ruling that strikes it down, then, man, they're really going to have a hard time raising money, though, because they're going to look insanely weak. But it's a question of, are they going to have the resources to do it? So, you know, they may have no choice but to look insanely weak. Everything's up in the air.
Wow. This is just getting more interesting by the day. Seriously?
Yeah. I mean, it makes me feel kind of sorry for Republicans. It's like, you know, come on, guys. It's still possible to quit the party. Quit the party. The water's nice on this side. Come on. We got cookies. And our cookies got pot
that's
in them, so you want to have
that.
Our cookies.
Yeah, that's you know these people are diehard. I mean, when does the base wind up abandoning these people? The base, the diehard base that Trump keeps talking about. You know, there was this, what was it, a Rasmussen poll that said his approval ratings were 50%. Wasn't that a questionable poll?
Well, Rasmussen is well known as being a rightward-leaning pollster. They're not completely worthless, but they're definitely. If they say his approval rating is at 50%, it's probably at 41.
Okay.
So it's not
but
at 31.
But when did these...
They're not going to overstate it by that point, but, you know. And that's the thing, too, is that you got to understand that that's the approval rating within the Republican Party a lot of times. Oh, my God. His rating inside his own party has taken a major hit over the last few. I mean, those 38% approval ratings are coming from dips in the Republican Party. And the thing is that the question you ask is not the right question. It's not what is it going to take to get the base to abandon these guys. It's the question is, what's going to happen? What's going to be the triggering event that's going to cause the base to abandon each other? Because, again, even the base of the Republican Party is a coalition, and it's not the strongest coalition. On one hand, you've got the Klan members, the Make America White Again people, the hardcore racists, these people really don't care about, like, porn. These people don't care about school prayer. These people don't care about abortion or that kind of thing. These people are the fucking racist base. And these are the ones that got revived by Trump. They've been kind of demoralized because Republicans have been, you know, nominating people who, even if they weren't great candidates, they weren't batshit crazy. I mean, say what you want about John McCain or Mitt Romney or Bob Dole or any of these guys that the Republicans have nominated. You know, all the ones I voted against, I can say that they were not fucking nuts. Okay.
Insane.
They weren't
true.
They were not batshit crazy. You know, it's like, oh God, my brain just completely farted. What were we talking about? I just baked cookies today, by the way.
Oh, very nice. We were talking about when is the base
going to
turn on itself?
When the base is going to turn on itself. And so the thing is, but then you've got the religious nutjobs. You've got, you know, so basically the hardcore racists, those are the Trumpers. Those are the Trumpkins, okay? And, yeah, there's plenty of evangelicals that are racist as fuck. The American evangelical movement really got a firm push forward from from racism. A lot of American evangelical organizing really started in the desegregation era when they were put to keep segregated because they were private religious institutions. And that's how really the American evangelical movement really got going, was to build segregated schools. So there are plenty of racists amongst them. But the thing is, ultimately, for a lot of the hardcore Jesus people, the Mike Pence Republicans, the hardcore devout, Jesus is coming again, we've got to, like, you know, govern according to the Bible type people. These people, the racist thing is secondary. It's not the most important thing. For them, you know, doing away with women's rights is far more important than doing away with Latino rights. You know, they're more worried about keeping women barefoot and pregnant in the kitchen than they are in keeping immigrants out from the southern border. Okay. And it gets to be a question of emphasis. Yeah, a lot of the religious nut jobs are also racist. Yeah, a lot of the racists also are evangelical Christians, or at least will do lip service to evangelical Christianity. Again, it's a question of emphases. And again, what happens if you get a Trump versus Pence thing? What if Trump just decides that he can't trust Pence, wants to get a new VP on his ticket? It's his right. I mean, really, the Republican Party rules are written where Trump really wouldn't have a hard time doing that officially. But that would, again, could spark that civil war. So then basically you'd see the religious nutjob base abandoning Donald Trump and the racist base abandoning Mike Pence if the sides decided to split off in the hostile camps. So I don't think that anything's going to happen to make the base abandon the leaders of the party. But I think that as the base starts to fracture away from itself, because they just, you know, those people over there don't care about the same things as much, the right things as much as I do. Then they're just going to wind up just pulling the entire party apart with them. It doesn't have to take a feud between leaders. It could just be an emphasis thing, especially, again, as the next round of, you know, as the next round of people who are going to be running for president or for various seats in Congress start coming out, who is the Republican Party going to back? This time the Republican Party backed a lot of Trumpkin types, a lot of hardcore immigration type of people. And there are plenty of people in the religious right nut job camp that are convinced that the reason why they lost so much is that they abandoned God for the politics of immigration, and they should have focused on abortion. And of course that wouldn't have helped them either, but it's helping them get into the conversation of saying, you guys weren't Jesus-y enough. That's why we lost. And then the racists are saying, no, we need to be more racist. That's why we lost. We weren't racist enough. And you get these sides starting to argue. And again, it just starts playing fucking hell with them trying to organize for what's really going to be an impossible election. I mean, you know, the Democrats would really have to seriously fuck up to not have a clear favorite against Donald Trump. I mean, they would literally I don't know how badly they could fight. They would have to nominate Nicki Minaj in order to not have somebody be an early favorite against Donald Trump. The Republicans are facing the most monumental election of their entire history as a party in 2020.
Right.
And going into it with everybody sniping as to what should, you know, where should the money go? And if the Republican National Committee starts spending the money, dumping money into mainstream candidates, then that's going to upset the nut jobs. Or if they start giving money to racist nut jobs, but not religious nut jobs, that'll piss off the religious nut jobs. And the religious nut jobs will want their money. And then, but then they won't have enough money. So they'll say they'll have to take some money away from the racists to give it to the religious nut jobs. And then the racists are going to get mad because, you know, that's their thing. So they have a big task and they're not going to have an easy time unifying.
My greatest fear is that the Democrats are kind of come up with too many people, and it's going to fracture the way it always does because there's always some kind of purity test for liberals, and it does make me insane.
The thing is, though, we had too small of a field last time because we only had two people that were serious candidates. I think we had too small of a field. I think because the people that we had, like Lincoln Chafee and Jim Webb, these were not real candidates. These were not actual contenders. And so it really made it so that it wound up being a slugfest between Bernie and Hillary, and it was a slugfest that went on and on and on.
Yeah.
When you start out a primary with three or four serious contenders, you're not going to see two of them beating up on each other constantly. They've got to defend themselves against three other people. They're like four serious contenders. It's a little bit, it's not so much of a slugfest. It's more finesse. There's more fine points, and issues actually wind up getting sharpened a lot better because things actually get discussed. So I actually think we could benefit by having more genuinely good contenders. And I'm, you know, some of the new classes coming in with the House, I'm liking. Liking to see the way that they're playing these games, that they're not falling into the purity politics that some people in their base are lusting after. But AOC, Ms. Cortez, she's a rock star.
Yeah.
She came out and endorsed Nancy Pelosi as speaker.
Yes, she did.
You know, let's face it, Nancy Pelosi recruited a lot of those candidates that wound up winning in November. I mean, that blue wave, that new freshman class coming in there, Nancy Pelosi helped recruit a lot of those people. So she deserves a lot of credit for the quality of candidates that we had to run. Because that was a big thing. I mean, we had a big election for people to vote against Donald Trump. But the fact is we had good quality candidates who were smart people, who, you know, knew what the fuck they were talking about and didn't have shit tons of baggage. And it was a great, great field of candidates. And AOC realizes this, and she threw support behind Nancy. And now, and you notice that all the people who are challenging Nancy Pelosi for leadership were all of these, like, conservative men.
Uh-huh.
Conservative men. It's like, it's like these guys don't think that these young progressive women like AOC are going to, let you use them to, you know, fight back against progressive values like women in leadership. It's like, no, fuck you. You know, I mean, we got some smart people going. It's giving me hope. And again, you know, and the hell of it is that, you know, after the last election, there was somebody on this one thread who was talking about Beto O'Rourke for president in 2020. And I said, how about him as VP running with Kamala Harris? And this dude was your prototypical Bernie bro. I have argued with this guy so many times. He called Hillary Clinton every misogynistic name in the book. And this guy was like, if he would get Beto as vice president, I'd vote for Kamala Harris. And I'm just like, holy shit. Color me fucking gobsmacked. Because this guy was just my God, he hit all of the bro buttons. But he's so in love with Beto that, Beto is vice president. That's good enough, man. So it's like, what the fuck? You know, it's like, hey, we can reach these guys. I would personally... A Kamala Harris, Beto O'Rourke ticket? Fuck you. Print up the tickets to the inauguration now. I'm sorry. It's just...
Yeah, please. please, because I love both of them so much. But, you know, going back to Nancy Pelosi for just a second, you know, it aggravates the living shit out of me. This woman actually was instrumental in us getting 40 seats in the House. Chuck Schumer.
And she passed Obamacare.
Nobody threatens Chuck. Wait a minute. They're all screaming for her fucking head right after the election. And nobody says a fucking word about the, I'm sorry, ineffective Chuck Schumer.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, Chuck.
Come on.
Chuck's not a terribly charismatic guy. No, he's not a tremendously sharp. He's nowhere near as good at keeping his caucus together as Nancy Pelosi is with the Democrats.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this woman has had incredible history.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
She's had incredible. First female Speaker of the House. She got Obamacare passed. That alone right there. Jesus Christ. And she fought for a public option long after people in the Senate had given up. She fought for a public option to be part of Obamacare. So it's like, don't give me that shit. It's like, this woman is a fucking powerhouse, and we need powerhouses right now. You know, we need giants. The other side is putting forth midgets. We need to put forth giants. So.
Yep. I mean, I understand.
But hey, we can enjoy ourselves now, you know? We can enjoy ourselves now because, you know.
Well, I can finally sleep again.
We're in a better place now than we were last year at this time, okay? We're in a better place. No. So.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. I do. Ever since the election, I do not wake up in horrible terror. I have slept better, not perfectly, because, you know, I won't, until it's all official and everybody's installed. But quite frankly, the first 2 years of this presidency, are you shitting me? I woke up every morning terrified to turn on the news. Terrified. And I'm sure a lot of people are in the same boat. And since, you know, the election in November, it's like, okay, the world isn't going to end. They don't own everything anymore, and they can't destroy all of it, and they're running out of time. So I'm greatly relieved and heartful about that. And again, I understand the need for new blood. I do not want to see Hillary run again. I'm not even sure I want to see Bernie run again. And I loved Bernie, okay?
Right.
And I like Hillary.
We need fresh faces.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
We need fresh faces. We need new leadership. We need new ideas. And, I mean, Bernie Sanders, he could be the grandfather of the progressive majority of tomorrow if he just, instead of worrying about chasing some vain run for president. Because let me tell you something. These magical campaigns that come out of nowhere and inspire huge throngs of people and that kind of thing, you don't capture that kind of lightning in a bottle twice. You just don't. You don't. People who try to do it again because they think, oh, I came so close last time, they fall far, far short the next time and kind of go out on a real downer note. I think that if Bernie instead were to go around and to find the next generation of progressive leaders to get them the backing that they need to run real credible campaigns, you know, that could wind up just completely revitalizing politics. And, you know, if he really wanted to leave a huge impact, he would go into places like fucking Texas. Go to the University of Texas. Go to the University of Houston. Go to these places. Go to Florida, go to Alabama, go to colleges, talk to students, talk about organizing them, getting them involved in those areas to actually try to take the politics back from the racist Jim Crow era politics that still controls so much down there. You know, inspire the next generation of leaders and help get them elected, you know. I would really love to see Bernie Sanders work like hell to get someone like Kamala Harris into office, and then Kamala Harris repay Bernie Sanders by making him the chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission.
Nice.
For his last job in Washington. Okay, let's put him in charge of Wall Street for a couple of years and see how much fun he can have. You know.
Oh yeah, I love that idea. See, you don't, and that's the whole thing. People need to get over the presidency as being the great prize. In some regards, it is. But you can be so much more effective in so many other ways, in so many other offices, you know? I mean, like you said, Securities and Exchange Commission, come on. That's like his wet dream, isn't it? Seriously.
Yeah. You know what I also think would be the most perfect thing to happen from President Harris? In January of 2021, have her nominate Hillary Clinton to be Attorney General of the United States and run the Department of Justice.
Nice.
Just that way she could be the one in charge of signing off on, you know, the warrants to get the second and third round of Trump prosecutions. And then she could just be like, guess who got locked up, motherfucker? Come on. That would just be perfect.
Oh, I love it. Poetic justice does mean a lot to me. You know that. I love that idea. That's insane and beautiful, and I want to see it fucking happen. Holy shit. And I want, here's my other ultimate dream, because one day Ruth Bader Ginsburg is going to say, I'm tired and I don't want to do this shit anymore. I would love to see Judge Barack Obama. Please make it so.
Yes.
Make it so. Yes.
Judge Barack Obama, yes.
Yes. He's a lawyer. He can do it. As a matter of fact, isn't Michelle a lawyer as well?
Yes, we could put both of them on the Supreme Court. Come on. That would be be awesome. Or hell, yeah. It's like you get a good enough progressive majority in the Senate and a good progressive president coming up, and you could wind up, I mean, I think it would be hilarious to, you know, see all kinds, you know, you could see Barack and Michelle and Eric Holder.
Wow.
Oh my God, that would make Rush Limbaugh's head explode if Eric Holder was on the Supreme Court.
Couldn't happen soon enough for me.
Oh yeah. Although, let me tell you something. That, you know, another thing that we can mark pretty much the end of is right wing talk radio. Yeah, have you noticed that it's been a long time since anybody's cared about anything going on right wing talk radio, because the boycott against Rush Limbaugh destroyed it effectively. It's dead. So you still find these right wing talk radio things in every market, but they're not making money anymore. Yeah. They're getting dumped by their parent corporations, getting bought by smaller and smaller companies, because the way that the advertising was always done on these things was that you didn't buy time on the Rush Limbaugh show. If you bought time on your local radio station, you bought time on the station, and they would give you ads throughout the day sprinkled amongst all their shows. Well, the thing is that meant that when people wanted to make sure their ads didn't show up on Rush Limbaugh's show, that meant they had to pull their ads off of the entire radio station. And a lot of these stations were all built around right-wing talk radio. You know, you'd have that one right-wing talk radio station in every town that had all the big, you know, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Bill O'Reilly, all these guys would be on there. And these stations are getting sold. Some of them are damn close to shutting down for bankruptcy because of the anti-Rush Limbaugh boycott. So really, I mean, you know, the biggest difference between the right and left wing are boycotts work. The right wing tries to boycott things. It's like, oh, wow, that's so cute. Like, how many of them actually bought Puff Daddy records? You know? Yeah, it's like, when you get a bunch of people, a bunch of, you know, Christian Sunday school types saying that we're not going to buy Puff Daddy records for whatever reason, well, I don't think you are that big of a part of the sales base anyway, folks.
Exactly. It's ridiculous. I mean, that is one thing they're very ineffective at. Their desire and ability to maintain a boycott is really lame. Very lame.
But hey,
I just looked at the time.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
What about Sean Hannity?
Is Sean Hannity, like, legally culpable for any of this bullshit with, you know, telling Trump basically what to do for a good portion of his presidency? I mean, the rumor is that they talk every night and that Sean is influencing policy pretty much as anybody else in actual government and not just a talk show host.
Well, the thing is, if Sean Hannity told him to do anything that was illegal and Trump did it, then Sean Hannity can't be nabbed for conspiracy to commit whatever crime it was. But that's about it. I mean, you know, a president can talk to anybody. They just don't have to do what they say, even if they are stupid and just do it. But yeah, if he advised Trump on anything illegal and said anything other than don't do it or, you know, tell the FBI, then yeah, he could get nabbed on a conspiracy charge. And let me tell you, there are going to get to be a lot of conspiracy charges flying around here before this thing is said and done. So, you know, for a bunch of conspiracy theorists, it's funny how many of them are going to go to jail for conspiracy against the United States.
Exactly. And one more question before we stop talking about politics, because I'd like a few minutes to just talk to you about other shit. What's going to happen with Assange? Is he going down for this, being involved in our elections? What's the situation there? I keep hearing his name get brought up again. So what's happening there?
I think Assange is going to go down somewhere. The thing is that he's not just going there. It's not just the U.S. looking at him, but the Brits are also interested in some of the stuff that he was involved in. The European Union is interested in looking at certain things he was involved in. He's an international guy. And so some of the stuff he did that broke the law, he did on other countries' soil. So even if the U.S. doesn't wind up getting a hold of him, I think somebody's going to wind up putting him on trial for part of this. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's convicted, even if it's in absentia. But the thing is again, the guy is – I mean, the guy's only hope to, you know – live a somewhat normal life as if he can make it into Russia, because they're the only place that's actually going to give him asylum, because he's basically a paid agent of the Russian government anyway.
Right.
So somebody's going to nail him. I don't know if it'll be the U.S., but somebody's going to get him. The Brits are especially looking at him for some of the stuff, because he was also involved in stuff regarding Brexit, too. So.
Oh, wow. I did not know that. Wow.
Oh, yeah, he dumped some information from the Russians that to try to encourage the leave portion of Brexit.
Wow, they just go around wanting to weaken everybody. That's pretty startling right there. Amazing.
Oh, yeah, very successful foreign intelligence campaign.
Wow. We could start talking about Facebook, but I'm not going to. Let's talk about something else. We can talk about
Facebook
on our next show. Yeah.
There we go. Well, I shameless plug portion of the evening. I have started a Patreon. The Patreon, go look up Taliesin Govanen at patreon.com. And there are different levels of support. Everybody, if you do $1 or more a month, you get my exclusive holiday story. Now, this year's holiday story is almost done. I'm going to be sending it out next week to my Patreon patrons. And this holiday story is a story called A Solstice Gift. It's a short story I published years ago, but I've expanded it into a novella, and I've really expanded the story. And it's a story I'm going to continue in future things. But people who become my Patreon patron at any level from $1 up get this story, and it's not going to get published for the rest of the world for a solid year. Now, next year around the holidays, I'm going to publish this story, but then I'll have a new Patreon exclusive that I'll send out to all of my Patreon patrons, and then they'll have that one for a year. So every year there'll be a new holiday short story that people have exclusively for a year, and that's at any level of support. And there's other things you can get, like you can get $3 a month. Every time I publish a new ebook, you get a copy of the ebook in whatever format you want. So you get the next book automatically just at that level of support. There are other levels of support that will have things like video tarot readings and video conferences and Q&As and Hell, if you don't want a video tarot reading and instead you'd like me to do a video workshop for you and your friends, we can do it over Skype and I will do a workshop. I will give you a list of workshops and I can give you a video workshop for you and your friends. And this is the kind of stuff that, you know, depending on what level you support me at, you can get any of this stuff. So if you want to, you know, get me on a video call to talk politics or to talk tarot cards or whatever, to talk Three Stooges movies, it doesn't matter. You know, it's like whatever you guys want.
Right.
And I got my first Patreon patron, which is really cool. I haven't pushed it a whole lot. I've been kind of like taking a backseat the last couple of weeks because my father passed away. So I've been kind of dealing with that, but now I'm crawling back out from, you know, my self-imposed exile and pushing my Patreon more. I'm still working on my next novel, The Hawthorne Grove, which is going to take place around a fictional ADF grove. And then the next book I'm working on after that is going to be the first novel in the Hawkinsverse, which is going to be an urban fantasy series with Trevor and Evelyn Hawkins, a brother-sister team who fights back against vampires and werewolves and you know, family ghosts that can't keep their ancestral noses out of the business of the living, that kind of thing. And that's going to be a new an urban fantasy series that I'm putting out later this year. So, yes. A mysterious Eastern European woman is leaving a trail of bodies behind her. Can Trevor figure out what kind of creature he is before she kills again? Trevor and Evie, him and his sister, they're the center of this series. So, it's good. And so basically, you know, people who, again, you know, become a Patreon patron, you know, you can get these things as they come out. You can get, you know, information on them. I'm starting a new exclusive Facebook group just for people who are Patreon patrons. So if you want to get on there and talk with people about, like, the short story or whatever, you know, pagan fiction in general, man, I want to see some people start talking about other novels that have pagans in them. And see if we can find some more that aren't fantasy based, because, you know, I'm doing an urban fantasy series later this year, but I'm doing plenty of books, you know, set in the real world, just because I think we need to have both. I think I'm going to be doing a blog post on my author's page here very soon about fiction being the last frontier of publishing that pagans really need to conquer. And just because it's another way of interacting with people. It's another way of people for people to learn things. And it's another way of people just to get interested in things and just to exercise that witchy spirit that we all seem to love so much. So.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
What else you got?
What else do I got? Well, I've got, I'm going to be after the first of the year, I'm going to be setting up a YouTube studio in my basement. I'm going to be doing more YouTube videos. I'm going to set up a studio in my basement for me and my kids to do our YouTube videos through. So I'm going to be doing some more video workshops. I'm going to be doing a series of videos on Wiccan and pagan history and who's who and what's what. And maybe even use some of the photographs that I got when I visited the Buckland Museum about some of the old unpublished photographs of Ray Buckland that I got to take a picture of. Really cool stuff. So, and I'm also hoping to do more appearances at festivals. I'm starting to reach out to bookshop owners. If you're interested in having me come out and do workshops and multimedia presentations, showings of Dark of Moon, the movie, readings from the book, whatever you're looking for, contact me. Contact me through Facebook. Very soon, my TalisonG.com site will have a updated contact form, and people will just be able to contact me through there. Big changes coming with that website soon. I'm going to be adding an author's blog. I'm going to be adding a main merchandise page. I'm going to be adding some other fun stuff, some trailers for Dark of Moon. And also, I think I'm going to be putting out probably one of the first things I'm going to do, actually, even before I'm done writing The Hawthorne Grove, is I'm going to be taking an old short story that has Trevor and Evelyn Hawkins and giving it a brush up, and I'm going to be publishing that short story on my author's site and anywhere I can do it around the internet, because that's going to wind up being chapter one of the Trevor and Evelyn Hawkins book. So that's going to be coming out soon, too. So I've got a bunch of stuff coming up in the pipeline here for the next year.
You are busy.
Well, yeah, we're also my wife and I are also going to be starting a ebook publishing house. We're going to be getting some old out-of-print public domain occult classics, some old medieval grimoires, and we're going to be doing new digitally re-enhanced versions to put up on Amazon. So that's going to be True Alternatives Publishing. And just try to get this stuff out there for, you know, it's not going to be ridiculous. We're talking like, you know, $3 or $4 for some of these like 300-year-old grimoires, just, you know, because the shit's just not in print and it should be. So we're also going to be working towards that. Of course, we're going to be talking to artists out there. If you're interested in getting some of your work demoed in some early stuff, the way we're going to be working the publishing company is that we can't really afford to pay people the first few things we put out. But people who do like art for us, like drawing sigils and that kind of stuff for the inside of it, people who help us out for free early on, once we do have the money to pay people, they get first dibs. So basically, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, we're talking sigils. It's not really that difficult. Most people who have attained the first or second grade in any occult fraternity, whether it's a Wiccan coven or a Golden Dawn Temple, you could do this kind of stuff. It's not that hard. It's just, I do not trust me with a fucking pen. Just don't. I'm fine with words, but just don't expect me to draw. But yeah, so, you know, that's another thing we're going to be putting out. I'm going to be reissuing the CD that Willow and I did back in the 90s. We're going to be reissuing that. I'm remastering the tracks for that. We're going to have that as a CD as well as digital tracks on Amazon. And also probably a fresh edition of the Dark. I'm thinking about putting together a new Dark of Moon DVD, a new edition. So, because I'm going to be getting a fresh HD file. So I'm going to see if I can put together a Blu-ray release for it too.
Oh, that's so cool! I love that. That's great. Boy,
and when I get this HD copy, though, the first thing that's happening is Dark of Moon is going up on Amazon.com for Prime streaming. So I've already got that set up.
Nice. I have Prime.
Yeah.
Love it. I also have the movie, though. I can watch it whenever I want.
But the nice thing is that if you've got Prime, you can stream it at no additional cost to you, but I still get paid. So in other words, turn it on when you're doing house cleaning or when you're, you know, or something like, just stream it as much as you can. And Amazon has to pay me every time you stream it. So.
Oh, that's cool. I like that idea too. Cause
yeah,
I've
exactly.
seen it like four times. Put it on while you're doing other things, too. That's awesome. I love it.
There you go.
That's so fun.
Let me tell you, after editing the Druid ritual sequence, my editor, my cinematographer and editor, Noelle, she knew every fucking lyric to that portal blessing song from the ADS.
Yes. Love it.
Oh,
that's
my
awesome.
God. By fire and by water. I mean, she could sing that in her sleep by the time she was done editing that segment. So,
wow.
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, one of the things I want to do with the new DVD release of Dark of Moon is finally put a director's commentary on it. So, but anyway, that's another thing for the future.
Oh, that's cool. No, that's a great – see, I like that idea. That's a great idea. What was going on in the director's mind – when this scene was being done, what was the intention? I love hearing what the artist was thinking when he creates whatever he or she creates. You know what I mean?
See, that,
I like that.
That's the hell of the thing,
that's
though.
That's valuable insight for future writers.
Well, that's the thing, too. The thing with that is that then, and I could do this. I mean, if I actually can put together a Blu-ray release, I'd have the room to do this. I'd actually have to do a few different commentaries because I could do completely different commentaries as the writer, a different commentary for that than I would as the director for every scene. I mean, that's the thing, you know, with the writing, as the director talking about the feel of the scenes and the vibe, but the writer is just a completely different thing. I probably have to do, maybe I'll just do two commentary tracks, but I'll call it the writer's commentary and the director's commentary, and they're both me. But yeah. I'll just label them as writer's commentary track, on or off, or director's commentary track, on or off. So, and I won't explain it on the DVD at all. I'll be like, hey, this is Talison Govan, and then I wrote this movie, and I'm going to talk to you about writing this movie while we watch this. And hey, this is Talison Govan, and I'm the director of this movie. And then, of course, at one point during one of them, during the scene that I'm on the screen, I'll have to be like, oh, hey, by the way, I want to pop in here. This is Talison Govan, and then I acted in this scene. And
yeah, that'd be great. That's actually pretty cool. I like that idea.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
pretty awesome. My goodness. Well, listen, love, it's 8:30, and we said we were going to stop at 8:30. Do you have anything else you want to plug before we wrap this up for the month?
That is good. I am good. I am going to go and grab a shower and relax and have another cookie. Because I made more medicine today. So Dutch cocoa cannabis cookies. So yeah.
Sounds delicious. May we all get access to it one day.
Yes. Yes. And now it's getting easier for Ohio people because you don't have to worry about dispensaries in Michigan selling to you because they just passed full legalization, full recreational in Michigan in this last election.
Yeah.
So it's yeah, may the rest of the country do the same.
Yeah, you're not going to give Flint clean water, but you're going to let them get high. At least there's something.
There you go. Well, hey, folks, I will catch you guys next month. It'll be after the first of the year. It'll be our New Year's show. So let's see what New Year's resolutions. You never know. One of the New Year's resolutions that Bob Mueller might have is, let's finally indict this fucking orange baboon. So, hey.
Let's do that.
Same bad time, same bad station. Party on, everybody.
Good night, darling. Thank you. All right. The incredible Talison Govan and our wonderful pagan pundit. May the gods make it so. That would be awesome. But anyway. All right, folks, we're going to wrap this up for the night. Have a wonderful evening. Hopefully you stay warm and dry and out of the snow. We are expecting snow here. We will be back next week with the amazing Sangoma Adolue. She is incredible. And my sister is putting up the show, so you guys will be able to check it out. We will have her next week, and we will talk to you then. Blessings, y'all. Have a great night.